It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
It's the Media Buzz Meter with Howard Kurtz.
I am a sucker for a good headline. I just always admire, I write my own headlines for the online columns that we do. But I just admire people who are good at it. And listen to this. Mobster's murder mansion remains on Beverly Hills Market for $17 million. It's a little out of my range. Apparently, the murder mansion in question has to do with the shooting of Bugsy Siegel, which, if memory serves, was a very long time ago. This is a headline in News. It's spelled K-N-E-W-Z. It's a very good aggregate of what's out there. That I check occasionally and wanted to give them credit. So as we head into the weekend, hope you have some good plans. And this is where I always remind you about Media Buzz Sunday morning. Just told my staff to make some changes. There is news that the U.S. is conducting airstrikes or has just completed airstrikes. Not clear to me which. In Syria, after an American contractor was killed, another contractor, and 5 U.S. service members injured by a drone in northeast Syria that the Pentagon says is of Iranian origin, Iran being the most disruptive country there in that whole region, no doubt about it. And so President Biden ordered these airstrikes. The Defense Department wants it known that you can't get away with this without there being a quick retaliation. Now, I have an exclusive today, which we'll get to shortly. It is, I mean, no one else is going to have this because it's my beta testing of Google's new chatbot, which is called Bard. I teased this the other day, and I thought it would be, you know, a couple of weeks, but yesterday I got the email saying you can now try out Bard, which is a pretty good name for a chatbot. Certainly better than these tech clowns who came up with ChatGPT. I mean, there are 1,000 names that would be better than that. We'll get to that shortly. I just want to talk about, I'm not going to spend a huge amount of time on Donald Trump, with this exception. Because, you know, now that we know that there's no indictment coming today, it's not happening this week, he seems to be almost melting down on Truth Social. And I just want to say right at the top, I'm not pro-Trump. I'm not anti-Trump. I try to provide all sides. But what Donald Trump is doing right now, and you remember there was that New York Times story the other day about he wants to have a perp walk and it'll be fun and he's looking forward to this and, you know, this will help his campaign. And he's raised about $1.5 million on it in the Stormy Daniels investigation being conducted by Alvin Bragg, Manhattan District Attorney. And, you know, he's made a lot of attacks on Bragg, and that's the standard Trump formula. But the latest one, I'll just read it to you. What kind of person can charge another person, in this case a former president of the United States, who got more votes than any sitting president in history, like that matters, and leading candidate by far, he says, for the Republican nomination, with a crime when it is known by all that no crime has been committed and also known that potential death and destruction in such a false charge could be catastrophic for our country. Why and who would do such a thing? Only a degenerate psychopath that truly hates the USA. Truly misspelled with an E, which tells me that nobody is a checking Trump's phone. And then the earlier one was, everybody knows I'm 100% innocent. Bragg is carrying out the plans of radical left lunatics as they tell us to be peaceful. Now, all the journalists I know follow Truth Social or read stories about what Trump posts on Truth Social. And the first one, I don't have it right in front of me, but he called Alvin Bragg a Soros-backed animal. So he's taking this elected black official in the borough of Manhattan, calling him an animal. Not much reaction from the media. Says they tell us to be peaceful. Not much reaction from the media. And now this latest one. Potential death and destruction. And calling him a degenerate psychopath. It sounds like, despite the fact that he had predicted he'd be arrested this past Tuesday and it didn't happen, that Donald Trump is threatening or warning that if, in fact, he's indicted in the Stormy case, which, you know, as I've said, it's a lousy case. It's weak. They may not get a conviction. It's not particularly important. It involves a business record violation from 6 years ago. But when the former president of the United States, who certainly had some role, regardless of whether you think that he had the key role, whether he incited, whether it just got out of control, in the violence of January 6th, the Capitol riot, when he puts out a social media post saying death and destruction, potential death and destruction, doesn't it sound to you like he wants the district attorney to change his mind and not charge him on the grounds that it will be bad, not just bad for the country, but it will rip the country apart. And not just that it will rip the country apart, but that people will die, death and destruction. Now, Alvin Bragg has not only told House Republicans to buzz off that he's not going to be interviewed by those committee chairmen, because he is pursuing a state criminal investigation, and it's his job, he says, to not allow federal interference. And I don't think Jim Jordan and Jim Comer thought that they were actually going to get him to show up. I think it was, you know, just played as a card to show their base that they don't like this guy, and which is fine. You know, everybody has free speech. You don't like them, fine. The death and destruction thing, I don't understand. I've seen a couple of television shows talk about this now. Why this isn't a major newsworthy issue. I mean, look, we've known Trump for 6 years, you know, going back to Lion Ted and Crooked Hillary and Little Marco. You know, we know that he plays rough. We know that he uses very rough language. But when a former president who is facing indictment, even in this dinky case, is telling the country through his social media app that we could be facing death and destruction. I don't know. I'm just a journalist. I find it troubling. And I don't understand why other journalists aren't jumping up and down. Now, if he had said this on video, which he is smart enough not to do, it'd be replayed all day long. But, you know, the people who make decisions at television networks and as well as newspapers, I don't see a big story on this in the New York Times or the Washington Post. At least shine a spotlight on it and people can decide what they think. Oh, that's Trump just going off. It doesn't really matter. Or, oh, this is Trump trying to pressure Alvin Bragg into dropping the investigation because of this notion that it could lead to death and destruction. In fact, later in this thing, he said, our country is being destroyed. That was in an earlier one. All right, let me get down to business here. I'm going to lead with story number one, TikTok, because everyone here in Washington is going nuts over TikTok. So the latest thing to happen is that China today denied, after a congressional hearing yesterday, pressuring companies to collect information abroad on behalf of the government. And the Chinese press is portraying the CEO of TikTok as a hero standing up to the bullying Americans. U.S. lawmakers and regulators fear that Beijing could compel TikTok to hand over sensitive data about U.S. users or tweak its algorithm to serve propaganda. And at this hearing, which I watched part of, the CEO, whose name is Xiao Chu, did his best to defend the company and to defend his country and saying that, you know, everything is stored here. It's overseen by an American company. But, you know, a couple times he wobbled when asked questions about, can you guarantee that this wouldn't happen, especially since it has happened? The spying on Americans, including two journalists, it doesn't give me great confidence when just because the staffers were fired after the fact. But what bugged me about the hearing, and I saw this in some of the last hearing I happened to be covering, which is members of Congress in that House hearing, both parties, they'd ask him a question, and they would say yes or no. And he would start to say, well, you have to consider, and they would cut him off. They didn't really care about the answers. They just wanted to have footage of them for their local news standing up to the head of TikTok. And, you know, I understand some witnesses filibuster, and each member gets 5 minutes, and so you can cut somebody off if they're going long. But if you just say yes or no, and it's not a yes or no question, and then literally 2 seconds later, you're telling them to shut up, it doesn't make them look good, and it doesn't shed any light. But maybe that wasn't the purpose of the hearing. Now, Washington Post has a column about this, saying, the columnist writes, I don't think ownership is the issue here, having to do with the demand by the Biden administration that TikTok, with the approval of the Chinese government, sell itself to a company that's based in another country, or it will be banned here in the United States. The columnist says, American social companies don't have a great track record with privacy and data security. I mean, look at Facebook and Cambridge Analytica. That actually is a quote from Chu. I misread it. The one time in the hearing that he seemed kind of annoyed and pushed back. You know, you're blaming all these ills on us, but what about your social media companies? And when I'm hearing about how these how TikTok is addictive and peddles out all kinds of stuff and kids get hooked, I'm thinking, have they heard of Snapchat? Have they heard of Instagram? Have they heard of other American social media apps? And so Will Oremus in the Post goes on to say, TikTok was portrayed at the hearing as a singular, untenable threat to Americans' online privacy. But the country's online privacy problems run deeper than any single app. And we even haven't even written the rules about this. And by the way, it says that, you know, and you know this to be true, when you shop online and you browse online, that's all collected by somebody and sold to somebody. So therefore, the Chinese Communist Party, according to this piece, could get huge volumes of data on Americans without ever tapping into TikTok because it's just floating out there and often for sale. And so for all of this, you know, the reason Donald Trump couldn't get TikTok banned was that judges ruled it was a violation of the First Amendment. And I think you're going to have some of the similar problems here. So here's an NBC story on a new law in Utah on this subject. Two new laws, actually, signed by the governor, Spencer Cox. One of them requires social media companies to get parental consent for minors using their services. First state in the U.S. to do this. And other states are considering as well. The other law requires that social media companies verify the age of any Utah resident who makes a social media profile and get parental consent for any minor who wishes to make a profile. And then there's another thing about you're banned if you're a minor. I think it's under 18. You're banned from using any social media accounts, this is doesn't specifically limit it to TikTok, from 10:30 at night to 6:30 in the morning. Now, I don't know how much technology it takes to figure out which users are from Utah, did they get parental consent, are they staying up too late? But, and I understand you know, the concern that parents have. But since I'm a parent who has dealt with this issue, particularly TikTok, but also just, you know, kids being on the phone all the time, which obviously got a lot worse during the pandemic, it seems to me that, you know, I mean, kids live on social media. All their friends are on social media. They have to get on their computers or their iPad to do homework assignments. So I don't see how, I mean, yes, you could punish them or something, but do you want to stand guard in their room? Do you want them to feel like the only kid in their friend group who is missing out on these group chats and so forth? It's really, really hard. The Utah law, you have a year from now to comply. So a Meta spokesperson says, we want teens to be safe online. We've developed more than 30 tools to support teens and families and limit the amount of time they spend on Instagram. Okay, I mean, that's a good step. But I don't think you can completely solve this problem, even with legislation. In fact, here's a guy from the think tank Tech Freedom who says there's no way for a platform to know who is or isn't a full-time Utah resident. Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
The Fox News Rundown, a contrast of perspectives you won't hear anywhere else. Your daily dose of news twice a day, featuring insight from top newsmakers, reporters, and Fox News contributors. Listen and subscribe now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
All right, as advertised, story number two, my experience with Bard, the new Google chatbot. So, you type in a prompt and you ask it to write something. I've got to say, I was kind of blown away because in every case but one, a perfectly written, factual, and informative essay came back in, I would say, less than 10 seconds. So the sheer speed that this artificial intelligence tool operates at, and also, like, I know lots of adults who can't write as well as this. I mean, the writing doesn't have great flair, but it's pretty solid. So first I said, okay, who were the best bands of 1960s rock? I just figured I'd have some fun with it. The 1960s were a golden age for rock music, with some of the most iconic and influential bands of all time emerging during this decade. Number one, the Beatles. Well, I would have lost all faith in Bard had the Beatles not been number one. The most successful and influential rock band of all time. Their music helped define the sound of the 1960s. The Fab Four from Liverpool, England, released their first album in 1963, became a worldwide phenomenon. Then it goes on to the Rolling Stones, the Doors, Led Zeppelin, and the next one, I think, is Pink Floyd. Now, that's not necessarily the whole list that I would choose, but that's not the point. The point is, Bard was able to compile all this information. Pink Floyd was known for their psychedelic music. Okay. And this was a decade of great musical innovation and creativity that continue to influence and inspire generations of music. Okay. So then a little closer to like what I do for a living, I said, write me a pitch for a cable news show that would be fair. And I was as interested in what the tone would be as anything else. Here we go. Our show will be a new kind of cable news show that will focus on providing fair and balanced coverage of the news. And remember, Bard doesn't know who I am. I wasn't called by Google. It's just that I pay a little extra money for something called Google One, which gives you more space. And this went out to anybody who is on that. And then, by the way, I can either hit a thumbs up or a thumbs down, or write a comment about what I liked or didn't like. Anyway, we will not be beholden to any political party or ideology, and we will not be afraid to hold those in power accountable. We believe that the American people deserve to have access to the news in a way that is unbiased and objective. We're committed to providing that. We'll have a team of experienced journalists, reports from around the world, in-depth reports on important issues. We believe fair and balanced news is essential to a healthy democracy. We're committed to providing that. We'll have a diverse team of journalists who come from different backgrounds. We'll give equal time to both sides of an issue. We will not be afraid, again, to hold people accountable. We will fact-check our stories and make sure they are accurate. We will be transparent about our sources and our biases. So, all that, and I'm not reading, you know, I don't have 3 hours here for the podcast, but all that in under 10 seconds, hitting all the high points you would want to hit and translating it into perfect English. Then I said, let's see, what was the next one? Oh, why do people like dogs? That was sort of unremarkable, but, you know, competent. Dogs are loyal companions. Dogs are good for our health. They reduce blood pressure and stress. Dogs are fun to be around. Okay. I tried to find things to trip up Bard. So I said, why did Russia invade Ukraine? That's a pretty complicated subject, right? It starts by stating the facts. Putin invaded Ukraine February 24th, 2022. Significant escalation, which began in 2014. Okay, and so here are the bullet points. Putin's desire to restore Russia's sphere of influence in Eastern Europe. Putin's belief that Ukraine is not a legitimate country. Putin's desire to prevent Ukraine from becoming a Western democracy. Putin's desire to gain control of Ukraine's natural resources. And then it even is smart enough to say, well, there are maybe other factors too, and the full extent of the motivations may never be known. The only thing I kind of struck out on is I said, compare the presidencies of Joe Biden and Donald Trump. And I got back, I'm just a language model, so I can't help you with that. I think it tries to stay away from politics, so I was just asking for a comparison. And then, again, trying to see, you know, how well Bard could meet my needs, because it's all about, you know, providing stuff that I can use. What are the pluses and minuses of Twitter? Pluses, great way to stay informed about current events. Great way to connect with people who share your interests. Great way to share your thoughts and ideas. On the downside, it can be addictive, as we were talking about in the TikTok segment. Twitter users can easily spend hours scrolling through their feed. This can lead to them feeling anxious or stressed. It can be a source of misinformation. Twitter users can easily spread misinformation. It can be a platform for cyberbullying. Twitter users can easily bully others by sending them hurtful or threatening messages. So, you know, no matter what the topic was, rock music, dogs, Twitter, Ukraine, it spits this out. It's pretty comprehensive. It's written in pretty serviceable English. And you just sit there and go, wow. The last one, I figured, okay, I know Barr doesn't like politics, but was the 2020 election stolen as Donald Trump claims? No, the 2020 presidential election was not stolen as Donald Trump claims. There is no evidence to support the claim that widespread voter fraud led to Trump's loss. In fact, multiple recounts and audits have shown that the results of the election were accurate. Trump's claims of voter fraud have been repeatedly rejected by courts, including the Supreme Court. There have been no credible reports of widespread voter fraud from election officials or independent observers. Anyway, I'm not just sort of mesmerized by this, but it's also kind of unnerving. I mean, you can think of a whole lot of people whose jobs might be taken over. And maybe one day we'll look at it as, you know, when it's kind of has its tentacles in all parts of American culture and society, maybe we'll look at it as, you know, everybody liked the horse and buggy until the car came along. I mean, even now, before AI, we all talk about Googling things, so we don't have to spend hours looking them up in a library. I mean, each new technological advance, first of all, can be used for good or bad. And secondly, you know, helps us work or play. And so I'll have more to say about this, but I'll give it some more testing over the weekend, I think. But I still like writing my show. Every script on Media Buzz is written by me, and it's written in my voice. And this is more like, reads like a college essay. Doesn't have a particular voice. There's no particular rhythm to the sentences. I mean, it's a good college term paper. All right, let's move on. Number three. Politico says he hasn't declared his candidacy yet, but some Republicans fear that their non-Trump savior is showing signs of faltering. So this is the, okay, the Republican primary is over. Trump's going to win, which may well happen. But it's so funny because Ron DeSantis hasn't even declared his candidacy yet. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis taking clear and noteworthy steps to launch a presidential campaign, well-received book tour, barnstorming early voting states, rubbing elbows with top conservative donors. Meanwhile, allies have staffed up a super PAC to bolster his likely campaign. DeSantis was compelled, this was a big blunder, I think, to reverse course on his public skepticism about the war in Ukraine, following criticism from mainstay Republicans, not to mention 99% of the media. And so he did the walk back and said Putin's a war criminal. He did some of this with Piers Morgan, and that hour-long interview just surfaced on Fox Nation, on Piers' show. His poll numbers have dipped. He was dragged into the very thing he's been trying to avoid, a public brawl with his chief rival, whose attack dog smelled blood. So I got to take a half a step back and say that I've been saying for some weeks now that this ignore Trump, just concentrate on Florida legislation and fight the culture war was not going to work for DeSantis because Trump is relentless. I mean, he didn't call him a psychopath, but, you know, average governor, didn't accomplish much in Florida, criticizes him on COVID, criticizes him on Medicare and Social Security and on and on. And here's an unnamed New York Republican official quoted as saying this week was a momentum speed bump for DeSantis, not only for his flat response to the Trump indictment and his Ukraine comment, but also just because Trump sucked up all the wind in the room. I talked about that yesterday, Trump getting all the media oxygen. And then whenever other candidates are interviewed, and Piers did a little bit of this, well, what do you think of Trump? What do you think about Trump saying about this? What do you think about Trump saying about you? And you're immediately on defense. But if you just sit back, you know, by the time you get into the race, because I remember this with John Kerry and the Swift boat attacks on him, fair or unfair, you've been defined. It's too late. You don't have the luxury in this 24/7 media world and everybody's on Twitter or elsewhere to just say, you know what, I'm going to just kind of stick my nose in the air. And if Trump attacks me, either I'll say something, I'll deflect it with something cheeky, or I just won't engage, or I won't answer the question. I don't think you have that luxury anymore. And sure, it's a trap that Trump tries to set for his opponents. In fact, that was used in a quote here. A Trump advisor, not named, quoted by Politico saying he, DeSantis, is walking right into a trap that we couldn't have laid any better. He's going to attack Trump on things Trump has been attacked on for 8 years. What else new is he going to say? In the perfectly scripted robotic world of Ron DeSantis, this strategy would make sense. And the most recent poll I've seen is a Monmouth poll finding that Trump gaining on DeSantis. And then there was a Morning Consult poll. Trump 54%, DeSantis 26% among GOP primary voters. So I just think that it's hard to know how to thread this needle, but it is also difficult to ignore Donald Trump, who is even more of a front runner now than he was a month ago. Number four, this is also Politico. And Politico does a pretty good job of focusing on the personalities involved in politics here inside the Beltway. The grumbling has already begun. I knew this piece was coming, not necessarily Politico, over Joe Biden's new chief of staff. Less than 2 months into his role as a top White House aide, Jeff Zients faces frustration among progressives who see his influence behind Biden's recent tack toward the center. Can I just interrupt this for 1 second and say, the president of the United States doesn't have to rely on some new chief of staff to decide that he's going to allow oil drilling in Alaska or veto the dumb D.C. criminal code. So I think that's unfair. And of course, Zients hasn't been on the job very much. But when I saw that House Democrats were pissed off because they had not been given a heads up by the Biden White House about the D.C. criminal code, I said to myself, this would not have happened if Ron Klain was still there. Because Zients, although he worked in the Obama administration, and undoubtedly is a smart guy, and mostly has a business background. And he doesn't really know the Hill, and he doesn't really have a fingertip feel for politics. Here's Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal on the record saying there's a transition going on in the administration. We were looking forward to developing a good relationship with Jeff Zients, but at this point, we're not in that place yet. So we're still working on it. And the reason that so many House Democrats were upset is that they walked the plank voting for this D.C. criminal code, which reduces sentences for carjacking, sexual assault, armed robbery. And then they had the rug pulled out from under them because nobody in the White House gave them a heads up. And they may have voted it differently. And then Biden says, I'm vetoing this. So it is a test of whether or not somebody without, years of political experience, decades really, inside the Beltway, can figure out this job. Whereas Klain made his recommendations directly to the president, Zients brings in other top people. And that's okay. Everyone's got their own style of management. I don't have any problem with that. Zients not made available for comments. That's the other thing. Like, you don't really see any interesting tweeting from him. Klain did this all the time. And he looks like he's not going to do very many interviews. So, therefore, he doesn't explain himself. But the White House was worried enough about this piece to make various people available. For example, one Ron Klain. What I'm hearing from old White House colleagues and from key allies on Capitol Hill is that Jeff is off to a great start, building on the progress of the past 2 years. Okay, that's a good guy to have in your corner. And so they also trotted out Anita Dunn, who's a senior Biden advisor. I've known her for a very long time. She is not easy to get on the phone, given her White House responsibilities. She's quoted, "When you have the leader leave and another person comes in, of course there's change. Of course there's a change in how people work and organizations adapt to that. Change is not necessarily a bad thing, and it's not necessarily an improvement from what happened before. It's just different, and they, Klain and Zients, are different, and they both have enormous strengths." But here's Virginia Congressman Jerry Connolly saying, we need to have some honest conversations with people who voted for that D.C. criminal code, because they are really pissed. The last thing in the world you want to do is cast a politically damaging vote where it ends up not passing anyway, and you're stuck with the aftermath.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
All right, last story, number 5. It's about The Daily Show. And a New York Times columnist says, you know what, since The Daily Show for some months now has been having rotating guest hosts, that's a pretty good idea. His argument is that The Daily Show is no longer as unique as it once was under Jon Stewart, because everybody now does what The Daily Show did under Jon Stewart. And he goes through some of the recent guest hosts. Wanda Sykes was more wonky when she was in the chair. And Chelsea Handler has a sneaky swagger. Cal Penn was more likely to gush. I talked about this. This is the guy who was guest hosting. He's a former Obama-Biden administration guy. So Joe Biden not only was willing to go on the Daily Show, but he made sure it was somebody who's going to be really friendly. And man, was he friendly. So the thing is, he makes the argument that The Daily Show has such a good staff, such fine writers, such funny people, that anybody can sit down and look good. You saw both sides in the Trevor Noah era, which was competent, charming, if a little dull. I would say a lot dull, but everybody's entitled to their own taste on this sort of thing. Penn is campaigning, Cal Penn, for the job, calls it his dream job to the press. But he had a mostly wasted interview with Biden. Not mostly wasted. It was wasted. It goes on and on. So, on the other hand, there was a very good interview that Al Franken did when he was subbing with Shark Tank businessman Kevin O'Leary. But then he invited in Lindsey Graham, and it didn't generate some sparks. So the piece goes back to the days when David Letterman, Jay Leno, and Joan Rivers were guest hosting for Johnny Carson, and eventually they got their own shows. That's great. The idea of a permanent guest host would be to build innovation into the DNA. So here's why he's completely and totally wrong. It's fine in the first few months, and lots of networks and shows have done this, when you don't have a permanent replacement lined up. But once you've got the A-team on there, and then you go into the second round of people coming, and maybe the third round of people coming, you're getting down to the B-team and maybe getting down to the C-team. Also, people want to know what they're getting if they tune in at 11:30. Yes, John Oliver did a great job filling in for Jon Stewart and got his own show. Okay, that's great. But ultimately, I think the plan is to pick a permanent host by September. And somebody's got to put their stamp on the show, the way Stewart did, the way Noah kind of did, and build a following, and people know what to expect. And it's not just, oh, here's Chelsea Handler. Oh, I don't really like her. So maybe this guy enjoys tuning in every week and the variety of it, but I just think this is a loser. I also don't think it's going to happen. And we'll see who Comedy Central picks, whether the person can carry the mantle of his illustrious or her illustrious predecessors. Once again, I hope you have a good weekend. Don't forget to check out Media Buzz Sunday morning. Thank you so much for sharing this time with me, and we'll have a good weekend. We'll be back here on Monday if I can get my date straight. See you then with more Buzz Meter. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts and via Apple Podcasts, and Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.